Haggai and the false prophet, they're there. And out of their mouths comes forth these three symbols. Therefore, we're very interested to properly identify them in order that we might properly identify the significance of the vision itself. Yes.
Why is it so important for the Protestant Federation to have the Episcopal Church sponsoring them?
All right, we can consider that right now. Of course, this study is being conducted from a very biased standpoint. I mean, I have to be frank with you, because I so heartily agree with what the pastor's written on it, that it's not really open in the broad sense of the word. But I feel that, notice that there is a caption in the foreword to the fourth volume that says that Armageddon would be soon, but not yet. What first had to take place? What had to take place? All right, Begettel, giving life. What giving life? The vitalization of the image. All right, how is the vitalization of the image to take place? Apostolic authority. In other words, the pastor saw that when the image of the beast would be transformed into a new symbolism called the false prophet, something had to take place. There was an absorption of the two into one new symbol, and that he assumed that there would be this laying on of hands, possibly, this ordination of the Protestant groups. You have the Congregationalists and other denominations identified with Protestantism, but they are not basically Episcopal churches. They base their thinking and their authority on the a group of individuals representing the body or some form like that, where in the Catholic, Roman Catholic Church, in the Greek and Anglican, their thinking is that this apostolic authority began with Peter and the Apostle Paul and went down through various individuals until the present day. The only thing is, when you come to the Greek and Anglican Church, they believe basically the same thing, that this apostolic succession comes down, but they don't confine it solely to the Roman Church. It's a little enlarged in that there can be a few individuals instead of just one. But basically, it's very few, not a congregational body that's involved. Now, if in looking in back in the First World War, and he was interested in the fulfillment of this vision, but he could see that the Protestant Federation of his day was more of a name. It didn't have much vitality. It was formed. There was an organizational representation. There's an Orthodox Protestantism that is implicitly recognized by one another. Certain churches recognize us and other groups as cults, and they recognize other groups as acceptable Christians in the Orthodox sense of the word. We are heterodox or unorthodox in our representation, it's from their standpoint. All right. Is that another question separately? No, it isn't, I don't see. So we'll consider it right now. Anybody here got a thought on that? Has this vitalization that's mentioned in the foreword taken place yet? The laying on of hands hasn't taken place yet, has it? We haven't seen that the Episcopal Church has recognized this prerogative as now being identified in these other Protestant bodies. That hasn't been done yet. But a big step in this direction has been taken by the mere fact that the Episcopal Church is now identified with the Protestant body. It is implicitly doing the same thing. by identifying itself with this other body, it recognizes this in others, that they have a right to be called Christian. That's relatively new, this concept, because in the time past, the Catholic Church thought it was the Church, the Baptist Church, they thought they were the way, and Lutherans and Methodists, each one thought they were the way, until about 1846, there began to be a feeling amongst Protestants that they were, each of these smaller sects, they couldn't really lay hold of that claim later, and they felt, well, maybe the Lord recognized another Protestant body, but they didn't recognize the Catholic body in that sense. But as time went on, these differences have been eliminated to a large extent in the thinking of our day, and now we come down to the present sense where it is not considered that important or vital today. I think that personally, since the question is directed to me, that the false prophet has been formed, I would say, in 1946, or 48 if you prefer the public date. But I would qualify that statement, which we'll explain later on. It's not speaking with authority yet. It's not speaking with authority yet. Neither is the dragon or the beast. But the basic formation of these symbolisms, I do think has taken place. Yes?
I have a little note here in my fourth body.
Right.
It says it was in 1880 that our pastor's forecast coming to the Federation of Churches, and it's getting light in the fulfillment of this verse here, the 13th chapter. And we understand that the two Lord beasts represent, according to the week, the Church of England. Ireland, and typified image of the Federation of the Church, by the Episcopal Church. Mm-hmm. And he understood that the two-horned beast gave life to the image to represent the Episcopal Church, conferring this ordination that you mentioned on the ministers of the Federation of Churches.
Yeah.
And then Brother Russell, back there in 1880, said that the Episcopal building, he saw that such vitality would be converted two ways.
That's
either it. By a blanket ordination, that by one act was conferred a physical ordination on all ministers of the Federation, or by an individual ordination of each one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And while conceding its possibility, Brother Russell doubted that it would take place in an individual ordination. And from 1880, he watched it very closely in connection with Revelation 13, 14, and 15. Until 1908, when he saw the giving of a life taking place by a blanket ordination, he said, conferred by the House of Bishops of the Episcopal Church in America,
mm-hmm.
right in our own country. And he gave this ordination in this way. He listed here, he said, sanctions the affairs of non-Episcopalian ministers of the Federation of Churches in their pulpit, in the Episcopal pulpit, as properly qualified ministers for the gospel, and that was quite a change for them.
Mm-hmm.
Details on this action of the House of Bishops and of the consequent controversy led by the high church people of the Episcopal Church, Brother Russell mm-hmm. lived in the 1908 Watchtower, page 896. And in 1909, Brother Russell notes that the bishops of the Church of England accepted a law that was passed by Parliament, and did a similar thing as to the non-Episcopal Protestant ministers of the British Empire,
mm-hmm.
like they've done here. And then he mentioned that in the Watchtowers of 1909. But I think there's also another point that we get to show, that while we got this blank ordination, Brother Russell concluded that the above given facts were actually constituted the giving of life to this particular image that we're talking about. Whether more or yet was the problem, he didn't know, because he lived a long time ago. And since that time, the carrying out of this policy of the Episcopal Church, I think we can see from history, has really increased, as we've mentioned here in this mm-hmm. Discussion today. I think it's something like the thought of Salome demanding the head of John the Baptist.
Thank you, brother. I see you're very interested in this subject, and your remarks are very pertinent. I appreciate it. Not too elaborate, not too long and lengthy, but you covered a lot.
with a few words. Very good. And your comments were very pertinent. Like it says in this foreword, whether it remains to be further vitalized or not, that remains to be seen. He even intimates that it might have been fulfilled sufficiently enough that later, when it becomes more active, the groundwork has already been laid. And then he enumerated here various steps of identification, the sharing of the pulpits and so forth, which is even done more today and so forth. Yes. Wait, I think I heard a feminine voice somewhere. Didn't I? Or didn't I? All right, then, brother. Yes, this is more like a tacit or implied recognition, and that may be sufficient, possibly. Yes. Of course, we know that the Catholic Church, in connection with this fraternization, is not thinking of losing its identity, but of regathering the fratelli separati, or the separated brethren, to themselves. There's more of a strategy involved there. And it is not identifying itself in a physical union or technical legal identity with the Protestant groups. But the spirit of ecumenism is there, and this is a part of the rolling together of the scrolls, the separate ends. They come together, but they're still separate. So you can come together, even conference, and be separate, distinct, that is, and yet together. And so, but this, in the Church of England and the rest of the Protestants, it's more of a physical organizational relationship. It's a more intimate identification than just mere fraternization. All right, let us just go ahead, because some of this matter will be reviewed again. We've only covered the first question, but that doesn't matter. Next, it tells us, what do the three evil spirits coming from the mouth of the dragon, the beast, the false prophet signify? What do these three evil spirits, frog-like spirits, signify? Let's consider it from this standpoint. Do they represent three different things, or three, the same spirit coming from the three symbolisms? What clue have we got? What is it, three different to frogs in the sense of message, three different messages?
No, they're all the same. The three unclean spirits are demon-like.
The reason that it wouldn't be three different types of frogs or types of messages is that there's not enough detail supplied. The very fact that they're all described in a similar condition, therefore we would have to assume that they are all the same thing, merely that separately they emanate from the three symbols. Out of the mouth of the dragon comes an unclean frog-like spirit. Out of the mouth of the beast comes an unclean frog-like spirit. And out of the dragon and false prophet comes this same thing. That they all represent the same thing, same message, same thinking, comes from the three systems. Of course, there would be a certain measure of accommodation from whence they came. In other words, it'd be the same message in principle, but adapted to the organization from whence it came. For instance, if it's the civil power, while it might have the same thinking in its message, it wouldn't emphasize the religious aspect. It would take the same principle from a civic standpoint, from a political standpoint, rather than the religion. But it'd be basically the same thing. Why are these three evil spirits likened to frogs? There are three cardinal characteristics. Three cardinal characteristics. Or if you have more, let's have more. What are they?
Why broken sound is intended.
And what was that last one?
I said, "What can you do in those times?"
Yeah.
Pompous.
Yeah. Pomposity. Because the animal can bloat itself. I better not tell what I did as a child, because I feel it was brutal. And I'm sorry I did it, but only once. And then the lesson took hold. But they can blow up to a tremendous size, and this represents pomposity, boastfulness. Another thing, the wise look has been mentioned. This would mean an air of superiority and pride. Yes, pride would, the boastfulness and the other would go together. It would be intelligence, an air of intelligence, superiority, wisdom. And then the other was the croaking. What's the croaking symbolize? Besides being continual. What? Well, the thought would be, back of it, coming from the frog with the big eyes, wisdom, big eyes, and the bloated body, the boastfulness, and as well as the croaking message would be along that line, but there'd be some other things too, the same thing, but a little different variation. What's that?
Authority.
Yes, this is something important. Listen to this. This is something important it's saying. It's warning. It's like a warning. Look out. Look out what's happening. Listen to us. If you don't, the ship estate will be overturned. And another thing, that when you listen to such croaking, after a while it becomes what? Repetitious. And what? Well, that's true. With some, they would. Yes, that's right. There is a propagandizing effect. If you listen to a thing long enough, after a while you begin to absorb some of it, some of the thinking. Just like if you're in the room with a lot of smoke in it, and if you're there a few hours and you walk out, and even though you don't smoke, it'll be all over your clothing. There's something that clings to you. Yeah. Yeah, it's fear, that's the croak, a warning. And it's almost the repetitious, it's the same thing, and not too much modulation or message content. It's just the same thing, and very often those that are organizational-minded and who drum authority in various groups, whether it's political or religious, very often it's a shallow message. It's a shallow message that's repeated over and over to get over certain main points, but no depth, which the vast majority absorb that message. It's easy for them to understand, and they think, well, there's a wisdom in connection with such acting along that line. Yes, well, that's been mentioned too, that after a while, you pick up the beat yourself. It's interesting too that the word croak in the slang language means what? What? Expire, yes, to expire. And so that's the destiny of the three unclean spirits and the symbolisms they recognize. It's doomed to failure. So it's croaking. From God's standpoint, from the fulfilled picture, realizing what's going to happen to this whole arrangement, it's Armageddon, even using the word croak, it means it's doomed to failure in the final analysis. And sometimes you have what you call the death rattle. That's where the croak comes from. You know, people, when they expire, there's an unearthly sound that comes from the last vibration. It's a terrible subject. But that rattle is related to this croaking, too. That's where you say when a person... All right, now let's go on a little further. Why are these styled miracle-working demons, these frog-like spirits? What are the spirits that come from the mouth of the dragon? It's three unclean spirits. They nearly look like frogs, but they're spirits. What are they? Three. Yeah. Yes. I'm sorry. I switched in midstream. The three spirits would be the doctrines or messages. There'd be three unclean messages which would be characterized by an air of pomposity and so forth, and they are identified with the doctrines of demons. What does this imply, then? What does this imply? That there will be a great deal of activity, doesn't it? When this is really fulfilled, in the strong sense of the word, there'll be great miracle working powers accompanying this message. It won't be merely a message along this line. We have to unite. We have to abridge our liberties. We have to keep down like communism and so forth, and they suppress human liberties in doing it. It's very hard to draw the line between license and liberty, isn't it? And that's why everybody is afraid to have that line drawn at all, and the consequence is everything is just a mess today. There's no limitation. But because many people are afraid to draw that line, where does license and liberty end? Where's the fine point? And there is, but it's you have to use the word of God, in which the world doesn't have. If it's miracle-working demons, it would suggest not only that there would be demoniac power and reasoning, thinking, and back of the message that would be delivered, which would come from these three symbolisms, but it would be accompanied by signs and wonders. That accompanying this message, there would be great delusions. In what way could these three unclean spirits gather together the armies that are spoken of in the Revelation 16:14? Yes. Mm-hmm. Like we say, a certain message might be spoken to enlist the support of others. And to enlist the support of others, no matter what it is, evil or good, you say certain things hoping that it will produce certain effects. Only in this case, it's the demons that are involved, and particularly the prince of demons, as we haven't got time to discuss that today, that will be involved in connection with this last battle. Yes.
Realize that they are being drawn to the battle of Armageddon. I mean, they're not getting together for that reason.
That's right.
Ignorantly, they're